This is Images. I'm Fred Martino. Thanks for joining us. Today on the program, a conversation about suicide, myth versus reality. All Things Considered anchor Edmundo Resendez speaks with Sacho Rao, Associate Professor of Public Health Sciences at NMSU and founder of the Southern New Mexico Suicide Prevention Coalition and Survivors Support Group.
Can you give us an overview of your organization and how the organization came to be?
Okay. The organization started in 2011, in November of 2011. My interest in having an organization such as this really came from the fact that in New Mexico, most of the suicide prevention services and finances, monies and funding seem, from our perspective, located in northern New Mexico. Although the rates of suicide we see are increasing in our part of the state, there has been very little services as well as outreach and support systems for families who are dealing with suicide. So our goal has been to create a coalition that includes service providers all across the state, but specifically related to southern New Mexico, and really do something that we need to do in our own area, because that has been lacking in a lot of the situation and a lot of the meetings that I've had with survivors, other survivors besides myself.
How did you yourself get involved personally with this organization and trying to be involved with suicide?
You know, my issue, my interest in suicide is both professional as well as personal. Several years ago, my husband, who was a well-known attorney in town, ended his life to suicide. At that time, I really didn't understand what suicide was all about and why somebody might end their life to suicide. But as I started to learn more about the circumstances in his death, as well as started to meet other survivors, families, and other survivors who have tried to end their lives to suicide, I really realized that this is an issue that is filled with stigma and secrecy in this part of the state and as well as in other parts of the country, and that we need to do something about to destigmatize it and make it okay to have a conversation and help those who need help.
In your journey that you've taken to learn more and educate yourself more about this, what has surprised you the most about suicide that you didn't know before, or that you know something you've keep learning?
You know, all the stereotypes about suicide and those who end their lives to suicide have proven mythical from my perspective. I've met so many people whose family members, etc., really break the tradition of the myth that we have about suicide, that somebody who is who has mental challenges, who has mental health issues, or somebody who's having a terrible situation in their lives at that moment. That's not always the case. Yes, people who have mental health issues and mental illnesses do address or deal with suicide in some way, but that's not the only group of people. And that's something that we need to understand if we want to help and address suicide in our community, that it is not that those people who end their lives to suicide, but they are our brothers and sisters and our family members. And that's important for us to understand.
What explained to me, and I think that many people have this idea, but suicide is something that goes across the board. It breaks beyond, you know, it just happens across the board in, you know, generations and, you know, age demographics and, right. You know, but who in particular in New Mexico do you see or do you hear the most about having suicide issues?
Right. You know, the military, I find more and more we are learning by, you know, our coalition has been trying to work diligently with White Sands, and we are learning more and more that military families have a whole bunch of issues of deployment and reintegration into community once the family member returns home. That's one group of people that we really need to be cognizant and working very closely. Youth are deal with suicides quite a bit in New Mexico. Older people in the age of 65 and older also deal with suicide disproportionately compared to anyone. Men more than women. But women attempt suicides a lot more than men do. But they don't complete those suicides.
Now, again, as we deal with misperceptions mm-hmm. and we deal with, mm-hmm. you know, different ways that people describe people that are suicidal that I've read about and have studied about, mm-hmm. you know, you hear about, well, that's a cry for help.
Right.
They're not really trying to, you know, really commit suicide. It's mm-hmm. it's a cry for help.
Right.
And, you know, I've heard stories from, you know, over time where people, when they describe, you know, suicide attempts by youth and men versus women, that women will talk about it more, whereas a male might not talk about it, but actually complete it.
Right.
And is that the case?
Yes. You know, I mean, my own experience, I'll just give you my own experience. I had a sense what was going on in my husband's life, but I never expected him to end his life to suicide. Women tend to talk a little bit more. The methods that women might use are less lethal. They may not use a firearm, but they might use cutting and other kinds of methods where there is a time for them to get help. But when firearms are used, then the opportunity to intervene and help somebody is not as high as it is with other kinds of methods. And, you know, in this time and age where we are talking so much about firearms and guns, I think connecting suicide to access and availability to firearms may be something that we might want to have a conversation in our communities about.
Now, do you find that perhaps this is, in terms of suicide rates are so high in the military, mm-hmm. is that they have access to methods like firearms?
That could be one. There are also extraordinary amount of events that military personnel see when they are deployed, and they need to deal with that trauma, the PTSD and all of the other trauma, and reintegrating back into your family life that you had left a year or whatever number of months before is also traumatic. And sometimes people or we don't have the skills to do it. And, you know, everyone tries very hard to help people with skills, etc. But it takes time. And sometimes we are an impatient mm-hmm. society, so we want it all sort of taken care of. Alcohol is a big deal in this part of the state as well as the rest of the state. And access to other kinds of prescription and non-prescription drugs is another issue that we need to have a conversation about.
Now, it's in terms of, you know, looking at, you know, alcohol abuse mm-hmm. and in New Mexico, you know, put it in context, because if I'm not mistaken, New Mexico has a higher suicide rate versus many other states or versus the country.
You know, New Mexico stands number 5 among all the states. It has consistently been one of the top 5 for a number of years since I've started to look at data. Alcohol use and abuse, other use and abuse of other prescription, non-prescription, illicit and prescription drugs, as well as, you know, the idea of economic viability issues are also very important. All of those things kind of create sort of the perfect milieu for folk to consider, you know, nothing seems to be working in my favor. So what is really the point? And I think that there's that kind of discouragement sometimes among adults that I often talk to. And I think we need to address it in a systemic point of view, comprehensively, jobs, schools, relational issues, and all of these other substances. And
what about mental health care? I mean, is there a mental health care issue? Because obviously, as you mentioned earlier, you know, there's several, you know, several types of suicide. There's, you know, suicide with somebody that's got mental health problems. And then there's suicide, you know, as you touched upon, with people that don't necessarily have mental health problems that don't show them, but do commit suicide. I mean, is there a mental health issue in New Mexico that's causing us to have such a high rate of suicide?
You know, my own sense about I'm not a mental health professional, but I think that access and availability to mental health services, and particularly access and availability to services related to suicide and suicide ideation, is very important. Not all mental health professionals know how to handle suicide and how to kind of address ideation and expression. If somebody comes and says, you know, I'm going to end my life today, or, you know, I'm thinking about it, mental health professionals have to know how to handle that effectively, safely, and carefully. So I think that a lot of education and training, in fact, one of the research projects that we have applied for funding as a coalition is to really look at healthcare providers' attitudes, beliefs, and knowledge about suicide and how do they approach those who have suicide expression or are thinking about suicide or have had a family member who has ended their life to suicide. Because one of the biggest risk factors is, if I had a family member who has ended his or her life to suicide, then my understanding of suicide, it's not as foreign to me as it is in another family who has never seen suicide or experienced suicide. So a lot of times, people who have seen their parents or another adult in their family die to suicide at an earlier age have contemplated it in their adulthood. So that's another issue that we have to deal with as part of that mental health access and availability.
As we look at New Mexico, you've got, you know, the large cities. You've got Albuquerque, you've got Las Cruces, and you've got Santa Fe, and then you've got a lot of other smaller towns. It seems to me, from what I've read and studied, is that Doña Ana County ranks number 2 in the entire state as far as suicide rate. Is that correct?
It is. Doña Ana County has very high rates of suicide. But what is surprising is that the services and funding resources in southern part of state are much less compared to what we see in Albuquerque and areas surrounding Albuquerque. It is understandable that resources are tight, and that we have to sort of prioritize. You know, Native American communities, the reservations, have high rates of suicide. So I can understand why funding and why resources are concentrated in certain communities. But I think that Doña Ana County and the southern part is an interesting mix. It's very close to the border. It is somewhat rural. It's somewhat urban in terms of Las Cruces. So when you have this kind of mix of urban-rural border, and people who live in this part of the state go back to Mexico oftentimes, live there, work here, or constantly, I think it's very important to understand the specific issues of Doña Ana County and really work at addressing suicide from that perspective, from that cultural perspective, rather than look at it from, the reservations or Santa Fe or Albuquerque.
And I take it that's what your organization is set out to do, is to draw more attention into southern New Mexico,
yes,
and Doña Ana County in particular, because again, just looking at the numbers and just looking at the terms of, you know, where money might be, use the word invested, mm-hmm, you know, to some of this prevention, it just seems that, you know, there's a cry for help that's coming from southern New Mexico,
right,
and has been there. And, you know, perhaps the voice has not been as loud.
Right. You know, one of the things that Margaret Short, who is a partner of mine, who works in this area of suicide prevention, she is the director for pastoral care at Memorial Medical Center. She and I have really pushed hard to get some attention to Southern New Mexico about the issue of suicide and suicide prevention, and also to highlight the inequities of redistribution of resources. And I am the chair for the New Mexico Injury Prevention Coalition, and she's a member of our steering committee member. That's one of the big issues that we're really pushing, is you have to talk about equity and how we address public health and social issues across the state, and that we need help and we need resources, and it is high time we got them.
Can you break it down by, in terms of men versus women in New Mexico that commit suicide?
You know, men by far successfully complete suicides compared to women. The ratio probably is 3-1, if I remember correctly. The other reason might be that men use more lethal methods to end their lives compared to women. Women use cutting, overdosing, etc., where there's a certain period of time. If help comes, then there is a chance that that suicide may not be completed, and that they might get the kind of help that they need. It may be a cry for help sometimes with women. But most adult men that I have talked to family members with have indicated that they have never asked for help. Or, you know, when you are so close to a family member, it's really hard to see. And I always give the analogy of being in the forest and not seeing the trees. Once the suicide happens, you look back and say, that's correct, I should have paid more attention to it. So men seem to be able to, and maybe as a culture, we are not used to men asking for help, or we don't accept men being vulnerable.
And if you don't mind me jumping, mm-hmm, in, and, you know, I'm going to look at some cultural, mm-hmm, issue, you know,
okay,
and you know, the machismo,
yes,
attitude that might exist in some Hispanic communities, because, it's something that's there. And is that part of it, where there is no asking for help, that there's too macho? And, you know, again, looking at even at socioeconomic, you know, rich versus poor.
Right.
I mean, it seems that, you know, it happens on every level.
Right. You know, suicide is very much, it doesn't discriminate whether you're rich or poor. But what is important is cultural attitudes, such as what you're saying, machismo, and that, you know, I'm a man, I'm the one who's to take care of my family. If I can't take care of my family, it means that I'm less of a person, etc. I think we all have those social stereotypes and gender roles that we play, and that contributes very much to the higher rates of suicide among men, from my perspective.
Have there been any studies or any discussion in that you have seen, mm-hmm, as far as what percentage, or is it even possible to track, you know, what percentage of these are as a result of mental illness versus, you know, non-mental illness?
Right.
Is there anything that's come across?
You know, data about suicides, it's a very interesting issue. The data comes from the medical examiner's reports. I remember looking at my own husband's death certificate. It said death due to carbon monoxide poisoning. It never said suicide. And I can understand that. Many families have said that they feel relieved when that word is not on the death certificate. So collecting data on the issue of suicide is complicated, is also very sensitive. And so connecting suicides to mental health issues is complicated. I believe that doing interviews and conversations with family members of those who come forward and say, you know, my loved one passed away because of suicide, I think those interviews can be very, very useful. But very few of those interviews have been done.
What kind of outreach is your organization doing out there, okay, you know, to provide services to people that might be looking for somebody to talk to?
Right. You know, we are doing two things. We started, as soon as we became a coalition, we started to do support groups. We meet twice a month. We meet at the Center for Grief Services, which is part of Mesilla Valley Hospice. We meet every other Monday from 4:30 to 6 o'clock. Anyone who has dealt with suicide, either personally or as a family member, is welcome to come. We don't ask any questions, any identifying information. You just come, share, talk to others who've gone through the same experiences. So that's one thing that we are doing as an outreach. The second thing that we've started to do is we've started to do PSAs on suicide. We did two PSAs, which were very short, but we just completed another 30-second PSA in Albuquerque recently, which will be broadcast all across, probably starting next week.
And the PSA is a public service announcement.
Yes.
And that's where, you know, a message that right. gives out information on it. And what is the focus of the message? What are you focusing on right now?
The message is that suicide is an equal opportunity sort of trauma that people face, just because your life is going well doesn't mean that you're not at high risk, or someone who's had all kinds of troubles is going to automatically end their life to suicide. So it's important to break down the stereotypes and the myths. So our goal has been the first PSA, public service announcement we did, was with a young man who lost both his wife and his father to suicide. His father had a PhD, and his wife was a nurse. So the idea that somehow highly educated people do not consider suicide, or families that are intact, families that look very, very wonderful from the outside, do not deal with suicide. The idea is to really break down the myths and to tell people that if you are worried about something, let's have a conversation. And we are creating a resource directory that really focuses on those kinds of providers who have some experience with dealing with suicide. So that.
And is there a way mm-hmm. that people that hear this message or hear mm-hmm. this conversation today, that a number that they can call? Is there an outreach, a form of where they can call somebody and talk to somebody?
You know, they can always call the 800 number that is there in the directory for suicide hotline, or 911. The most important thing is if you are thinking about ending your life, or if you feel that you have no other options, call 911 and call the 800 hotline that is available for suicide. If you want to get some help for a family member, You can call, we have a number, 575-635-6265, or we are getting our website ready. It will be ready next week. It's endsuicide.net, where you can go, and we're going to have it connected to Facebook and to Twitter, so that way people can start posting messages of help or good things that have happened to them, so there is both hope as well as the possibilities of help.
Now, again, you know, we talked about earlier about, you know, the cry for help.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, again, one of the stigmas is, you know, when should that cry for help come? And, you know, I think that I think the sooner the better. You know, once you feel as though you need somebody that you know, you've got something in your life that's come along, that is the time to talk to somebody.
Absolutely.
Whether that be, because again, you know, one of the things I often hear from people that are survivors is that they had no idea.
Right.
And that they had no idea that their loved one was going through that kind of problem. And then they start to look for the signals that they should have gotten. And, you know, if we spend a lot of time looking for signals, we could find signals on a lot of things. But, you know, I think for the people that really need the help is not to be afraid to ask for
right.
that help. And ask right. for, the, you know, that cry for help is nothing to be ashamed of.
Right. You know, part of the asking for help not only has to do with the person who needs to ask the help, but it is also the person they ask for help from. You know, not to be afraid. If somebody says, you know, I'm not feeling good, I am really have been thinking about suicide. I have seen this happen so many times. People recoil and people get nervous and scared. I know my own journey after my husband passed away. It took a number of years because a lot of people that I thought I could talk to, after a certain point, realized, oh, stop talking about suicide. So the recovery and the healing from suicide and the grief is a little bit different than when you lose someone to an illness or something of that kind. There are no goodbyes. There's no closure. And what survivors are left with oftentimes is, what could I have done better? What should I have done? And so I think that both our own education, people who have nothing to do, who have never dealt with suicide, there has to be education there. And there also has to be education on part of those who are dealing with it, so that when they ask for help, people are compassionate enough and caring enough that if they can't help, they will make sure that this person gets the kind of help that they need.
Edmundo Resendez, speaking with Sacha Rao, Associate Professor of Public Health Sciences at New Mexico State University and founder of the Southern New Mexico Suicide Prevention Coalition and Survivors Support Group. I'm Fred Martino. Thank you so much for joining us on Images.
Images on 90.7 FM and KRWG.org is brought to you by the Unitarian Universalist Church of Las Cruces, a church that welcomes diversity in the celebration of life and the search for truth and meaning. Sunday services at 9 and 10:30 a.m. with roundtable discussion forum and youth religious education 10:30 a.m. 522-7281 and on the web at uuchurchlc.org.